6, an AA group will never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Now, the related facility may be an outside group combating alcoholism, or an enterprise that some members of AA want to start, and it was the latter that enterprise AA wanted to start that most often confronted AA when it was a young fellowship. And you know, even today, it still confronts our fellowship, especially with all of the trust money and tax-free money that's available today. It used to be a lot of government money, but the government doesn't have any money. And back when the Hughes-Javits bill came in about 18, 19 years ago, roughly in that era, to where the government got involved in it, little AAs, you know, all over the world going into the drunk business, and you'd run into one of them on the street and say, well, you know, I haven't seen you in the group in a long while. Well, oh, David, I'm a 7. I said, well, what's a 7? Well, that's a government pay scale. I'm working for the government. David, all my life, that's all I've ever wanted to be is an alcoholism counselor. I said, well, that's fine, but I said, you're only sober 2 years. And it took you 23 years to admit you was an alcoholic, but all your life, that's all you've ever wanted to be is an alcoholism counselor. And a lot of little drunks went out figuring because they 12-step a few drunks and sponsored a few drunks that that qualified them to be an expert on alcoholism. And a lot of them got all confused, and some of them had to partake of that grape again because that's heady business, you know. In AA's early days, you know, outside agencies were very scarce, and some members thought that AA, you know, should cover the whole alcoholism field. And in the early Old Alcoholic Association, which was later renamed the Alcoholic Foundation and later renamed the General Service Board of Alcoholics, but the original charter, it could heal drunks, it could throw them out, it could bring anybody that they want into the AA, believe it or not. And in 1943, that articles of incorporation were changed because AA was getting itself involved in a lot of things that had no business getting involved. And, you know, and there are a lot of ambition centers, you know, have failed, and some individual members of AA have founded some very successful clubhouses and rest farms, you know, and halfway houses. We got more halfway houses, 3/8-inch houses, 1/4-inch houses, 1/6 that you can shake stick. Kind of reminds you taper off a drunk, you know. You're moving from here to here to here to here. And then you pray he doesn't get drunk, so start all over again. Because by that time, he's either run out of insurance or money. And then he comes to find out, well, I think I'll go to AA. And he's there for a while, and he says, well, why didn't somebody tell me I could get all this for nothing? You know? Well, there's a reason for it. There's a reason for it. And that is the fact that they didn't avail themselves. It's always been here, and it will be here as long as God wants us to, you know? Now, a lot of these enterprises are run by members of AA and patronized by other members or prospective members, but here it comes. Money and property are involved. And therefore, it has proven to be wise as a result of our own experience to keep the operation of the facility separate from that of an AA group. And it is suggested that not use the name, you know, 12-step, first step, fourth step, fifth step house. Now, towards outside agencies dealing with alcoholism, the AA policy is cooperation but not affiliation. A group cooperates, for example, by welcoming referrals from treatment modalities or hospitals or clinics or from correctional facilities or by sponsoring AA meeting types and groups in institutions. But in one area, money for a rehabilitation was solicited at an AA meeting applying affiliation. It sure was. In another area of our country, AA was listed among the beneficiaries of United Fund Drive. And AA members employed by outside agencies wear two hats. But Tradition 6 cautions about any such member against wearing two hats at once. It's impossible for an alcoholic to wear two hats at the same time. It's very simple. We haven't got but one head. On the job, he or she may be an alcoholism counselor, but there's no such thing as an AA counselor. There's no such thing as an AA counselor, AA doctor, AA lawyer, AA judge, AA dentist, AA bum, AA bricklayer, AA housewife, AA... We haven't got one kind of AA, and that's a member. And what we do on the outside has nothing to do on the inside. Period. Here we learn how to live out there with them tigers out there. Because that's where they are. And so, AA has grown. AA has stayed this way. You know, people do not realize that there are a lot of members of AA, believe it or not, believe that AA is the only one that has started for an alcoholic in this country. No, they came over with a Mayflower. Most of them are gone. There's one left, maybe up in New England, the Jacobi Society. I think they got around about less than 2,000 members. Why has AA stayed? Singleness of purpose. Singleness of purpose. Now, at meetings, those who work in the field of alcoholism, they're just a regular member of AA as anybody else, not an alcoholism counselor. I don't know about over here in the Southeast, but in our part of the world, all the way from the Mexican border up through Canada, up to Canada. We see very, very few members who are members of AA who work in the field of alcoholism at regular AA meetings, on a regular AA basis. I don't know the reason, but we don't. And I think that that's one of the situations, and I'm going to get into it before I get out of this tradition. Now, you always have to remember that, I don't know about anyone else, when I'm asked to share traditions and these doing what I'm doing now, I never am here to tell anyone what to or what not to do. Any member of AA what to or what not to do, any group what to or what not to do. I'm just sharing AA's experience. And you know, we're not here because of AA. Our traditions were not written because of our good behavior. They're written because of our bad behavior. And we're not brothers and sisters of virtue, but brothers and sisters of defects of character. And our willingness to have them removed under the power, love, and guidance of a power greater than ourselves. Pardon me. And so today we understand and accept the paradox that the more AA sticks to its primary purpose, the greater will be its helpful influence everywhere. You know, we're all perfectionists. And after failing at perfection, we had gone to the other extreme and settled for the bottle and the blackout. And through Providence, and then Providence through Alcoholics Anonymous has brought us within reach of our highest expectations. So it became good reason with this kind of thinking, why shouldn't we share our life with everyone? Well, we do have a way to share our life with everyone. If one reads the 12th step, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics, and we share this way with everyone by practicing these principles in all our affairs. Not just from 8 to 9 or 9 to 9:30 or 10:30 in an AA meeting, but in all our affairs. So in the early days, they tried AA hospitals, and they all folded because you cannot put an AA group in the business. Too many busybodies mess up the formula. If you've got a group and you've got 75 members in it, you've got 75 dictators. And no one wants to be a second-class dictator. Everybody's got a different way to do it. Then AA groups had tried their hand at education. And when they began to publicly drumbeat this merit or that brand of AA, people became confused. People started asking, did AA fix drunks or was it an educational project? Was AA spiritual or was it religious? Was it medical? Was it psychiatric? Was it witchcraft? Or was it a reform movement? So in utter confusion and disgust, AA found itself getting married to all kinds of enterprises, some good and some not so good. Then some AA groups started hounding legislators for legal reforms in this business, committing drunks to prisons and asylums. That made good newspaper reading or little else. And the news now is, and it's spreading rather swiftly, not only in this country but in others that have this court referral system, that the judiciary, in the United States in particular, is getting very, very, very upset by sending drunks to Alcoholics Anonymous, or committing them, as they say, and then they show up again and again and again in front of the same judge. And the judge says, well, why are you here again? Well, you sentenced me to AA, and AA doesn't work. No one, or too little members of AA, have gone to the judiciary system and sat down and explained to them that, number one, we are not responsible to report who attends an AA meeting, who doesn't. That is up to the individual. And if you want to see whether they comply with it, why don't you come and babysit with them? I suspicion that a lot of the judiciary don't want to come and babysit them because they may suspicion they could be one of us. And so it makes good newspaper reading, or little else. Now, signing these court papers, it can get very, very, very dangerous. Someone outside AA sends them to AA, and they've got to go to so many meetings in so many days. If you've ever seen them, I don't know. They got the time, the date, the name of the group, the topic discussed, and a member of the group or secretary to sign it. Now, there have been many, many instances where they come and get that paper and they get it signed, they leave and they go get drunk. End up in some serious crime sometimes. They're hauled before the judge and they said, well, here's my paper. This is the date I went. The topic discussed, the name of the group, the telephone number if they have a group, and the name of the person that signed it. Right there and then, the AA group and the AA member becomes a part of the public record. That's what we're talking about. That is not cooperation. That's affiliation with the judiciary system. The sensible way is they bring a letter and they, in turn, take it to themselves. But you see, they trust us. But what they don't realize, the nature of the illness, we cannot guarantee to anyone that is committed to come to us that they are going to get sober and stay sober. Those of us who have not been committed today, we can't guarantee that we'll be sober next week, next month, next year, 5 years from now. They don't tell them the nature of the illness and the fragility of it. But more important, they do not explain that AA is a spiritual recovery program. And that whoever comes to AA, there is no such thing as a slip in Alcoholics Anonymous. The book that I read, that one, specifically says that everyone in there who goes back to drink and fail to enlarge and develop their spiritual life. Period. And then some AA group, you know, it all that stuff made good newspaper reading. Then AA got mired into politics. So our experience then implanted a deep-rooted conviction that in no circumstance could we endorse any related enterprise, no matter how good. We of AA could not be all things for all men, or should we try? Then there was an AA member who thought about taking a public relations job with one of the largest distilling companies to educate the public why alcoholics should not consume liquor. Well, now everybody knows why an alcoholic should not consume liquor except the alcoholic. But that distilling company wanted the member to use his full name in all of its advertisement. He was be described as a director of publicity and as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, there couldn't be the slightest objection if such a distilling company hired an AA member solely because of his public relations ability and his knowledge about alcoholism, but that was only half the story. For in his case, not only was an AA member to break his anonymity at the public level, he was to link the name of Alcoholics Anonymous to this particular educational project, this particular distillery, and all of the brands of alcohol that that distillery distills in the minds of millions. Let me tell you what kind of head this alcoholic's got. I'm there, I'm watching television. And here comes this fella on there, you know, he's got his hair all blowed back, wearing one of them fancy double-breasted suits, and got a tie on that looks like somebody threw up all over it, you know. And he gives his full name, and I am not only director of Public Information Education Project, but I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my head goes to thinking, David, that distilling company, the most popular brand that it sells is Old Buzzard. Now, if I drink Old Buzzard, I'm not going to be an alcoholic. AA endorses it. That's the way drunks think. That's exactly the reason why the name has to be so carefully not linked, that we don't endorse it. Now, as a result, and after coming to his senses, that particular member, well, he really didn't come to his senses. He went to the group and he told them, he said, I'm going to go work for this liquor distilling company, and I'm going to be listed as a director of public information on an educational project, and they're not only going to use my full face and name and all of its advertising and everything else. And the drunks looked at him and said, hey, idiot, before you come to AA, you were unemployable for 8 years, and after you got sober, you couldn't get a job for 4 years. And it's only because of Alcoholics Anonymous and that you have a way to live sober. And now you... And he certainly didn't want to be the one to land A in big-time trouble, and this he certainly would. So concerning endorsements, our friend said it all, we was as never before. We could not land the AA name to any cause other than our own. Now, I'm going to talk about something, substance abusers in AA meetings. And this has to do with relationship with treatment modality. One recurring problem faced by AAs who carry the message into treatment facilities is the proliferation of non-alcoholic drug addicts in these facilities. Often the guidelines for attendance to these patients at AA meetings are unclear, which leads to complications on the part of AA members who try to carry the message. AA's policy regarding non-alcoholic drug addicts is usually unknown to treatment facilities. And that's utterly amazing. They're the first should know. But believe it or not, and we've got members of AA who work in those facilities, know better. And this is where money and spirituality, in this case, does not mix. The only place that money and spirituality mix is in the AA hat, in the basket that we pass. And so, therefore, committee members and other AAs find themselves in the position of having to educate professionals in this matter. Some treatment facilities are inclined to view all substance abusers and alcoholics and having the same common addictions, and are treated accordingly. Now, treatment facilities may have sufficient or valid reasons for employing these approaches during treatment process. Always remember now that our traditions are our traditions, and they're not treatment facility traditions. However, AAs who carry the message into treatment facilities often find that non-alcoholic addicts are encouraged by the facilities to attend AA meetings within the facilities. In addition, because of the effectiveness of the AA program in providing post-treatment support to alcoholics, non-alcoholic drug addicts are often referred to AA when they leave treatment facilities. In each case, the practices of the treatment facility are clearly at odds with AA's tradition. AA's singleness of purpose must be communicated to the administrators and staff of treatment facilities by the treatment facilities committees or any member of Alcoholics Anonymous who is familiar with our tradition. Again, those members of AA on those committees have the task of informing and educating these professionals about AA's policy and AA's tradition. AA meetings within a treatment facility cannot be substance abuse meetings, because an AA meeting is not a substance abuse meeting. They are held for alcoholics only, including those who are duly addicted. And although enlightening treatment facility personnel for on the reasons for abiding by AA policy in this matter is often difficult and time-consuming, experience has shown that the most effective communication by AAs is done in a loving manner and in the spirit of cooperation. Those are not my words. Those are word for word from our treatment facility workbook, page 83, which was developed by the General Service Conference. And those of you who have go to your area assemblies and go to your district meetings many years ago, remember when this thing was formulated. It is our responsibility to explain to them that when they refer non-alcoholic drug addicts to AA, if they're going to refer them to them, then we have to have the freedom to say, we got someplace else for you to go, and that's refer them to Narcotics Anonymous or Cocaine Anonymous or any other addiction or any other addiction. Sometimes that may be a little bit uncomfortable for some members to do, but I've got news for you. Whatever group you belong to, the alcoholics appreciate it. The alcoholics appreciate it. And it has to do with communication. Tradition 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. There's not a tradition that's taken a bigger beating than this one. And we have to be practical. A group can hardly hold its regular meeting on a street corner, and an empty basket will not fill a coffee pot. And as soon as we become active in our group, we learn how many other expenses are involved in making meetings effective. Then our horizons broaden. What about that intergroup or central office that so many of us call for help? Phone companies do not give free service. They are so thankful that we're sober and not trying to dig up the Ayatollah by long distance or trying to get hold of a penguin bootlegger in the South Pole. I have a tremendous relationship with the phone company. They have let me know that as long as I pay my phone bill, the phone service will continue. And when I quit paying it, they'll cut it off. Now, that's what you call an understanding, you know. Beyond our own locality, we learn about the AA General Service Office and the work it does for for groups everywhere. AA activity is self-supporting, or ought to be at all levels, and it often comes right back to us as individual members because we are AA. AA belongs to us. Sometimes when we're new, our contributions rattle rather than rustle. Very few groups you go to do that they pass around an empty 2-pound coffee can, you know, for a deal. They pass a basket or a hat or something, and, you know, you pass a coffee can, it's empty, and somebody puts a dollar in, and it just goes down real nice and silent. Somebody puts a quarter in and goes, plunk, and everybody turns around. And the group I come into, I used to sit back in my early days and knew, he was reputed to be not only one of the wealthiest members of Alcoholics Anonymous anyplace, but also one of the wealthiest members in the United States. And the reason I sat next to him is because I thought maybe I could fleece him out of some of his money. And I'd sit there, and here comes the basket. And I'd put my dollar in, and he'd reach in his pocket, and he'd pull out one of them old-fashioned peddler's purses that was folded over and had rubber bands on it. Take the rubber bands off, and it's about that long. Had three snaps. He'd undo the middle snap, and that allowed the right-hand snap to open up, and he'd run his hand through there, and he'd manipulate it like a puppet, and he'd pull out a quarter, and he'd put a quarter in that basket. And I look at that tight son of a gun, and I'm building up a resentment at every meeting. It didn't ever occur to me to go sit over there so I wouldn't have to watch him, you know. And one particular night, I was just livid. I put that dollar in there, and he put that quarter in there, and after the meeting, my sponsor grabbed me, and that's the reason why we look in each other's eyes and shake each other's hands. It tells us a lot about each other. And my sponsor looked in my eyes and said, "What's wrong with you?" I said, "That no good son of a gun. And boy, that multi, almost a billionaire, and here you're one of his business partners, too." And he said, "What?" I said, I put a dollar in, and he puts a quarter in. My sponsor looked at me and said, "David, where did you get that dollar you put in the basket tonight?" I dropped my head and I said, "I wrote another hot check." He said, "AA doesn't want that kind of money, and AA doesn't need that kind of money, you know." And he said, "And furthermore, that member of Alcoholics Anonymous helped more people in AA and IA if you live to be 390 years old. He said, "Don't put that kind of money in there anymore. If you got whatever you got, honestly." Now, the first members of AA were in the same fix. You know, they didn't have any money. And it seemed to them that AA needed more outside help than the modest gifts that were coming in. Their plans called for some big-shot ideals of philanthropy. But as one of the greatest non-alcoholic friends that AA will ever have, John D. Rockefeller, Jr., he said, "I'm afraid, boys, that money is going to spoil this thing. And a few AAs had already reached the same conclusion, and gradually the minority became the majority, and our experience has shown us that us members ourselves can provide enough to find AA's proper aim." I said, "AA's proper aim, as long as we are informed." So in the simplest application, Tradition 7 is easily understood when we hear about a new AA group being started with funds from a federal grant. Our quick reaction is that somebody goofed. Now then, we come to the borderline cases, the groups that put on a raffle for the benefit of their central office and invite the general public to participate and buy tickets, or have weekly bingo parties and invite the general public to come in and play bingo. Well, I'll tell you, there's a group out there in West Texas. There were six members, and they all built up resentment against the group, and they decided to leave the group. And they went out and they rented a meeting place. Now, drunks don't go out and buy, you know, two or three tables and 25 chairs. They went out and bought 50 tables and 200 chairs. Because they just knew that everybody they worked with and sponsored was going to come right along. 9 months later, the same six were waiting for drunks to come instead of going getting drunks. And they were all getting broke, paying the rent and the light bill and everything else, and they didn't know what to do, and their ego demanded that they stay there and against all odds. So they decided, well, after the Saturday night meeting, let's play bingo. And we'll print up a bunch of flyers and we'll send them all the way, cash prizes. So they did that. The next Saturday night, right after that 8 o'clock meeting at 9-something, every chair was filled and all the tables were overflowing. They went down and got some used bingo cards and some beans. And they started playing bingo, giving cash prizes. The next week, word spread around. Them drunks are giving away money. Non-alcoholics were coming, not even members of any other cooperating fellowship. Everybody's coming. And they got there, and the meeting was from 8 to 9. They got there at 8:30, disturbed the meeting to get a seat, so they moved the meeting back to 7 o'clock. Then they went out and bought some more tables and more chairs. And finally, the bingo got so big on Saturday night, they just knocked off the Saturday night meeting. And now they only had it on Tuesday and Thursday. Then they found a one-legged drunk that got out of the recovery unit in a state insane asylum. They put made him a bed and a hot plate and some lavatory facilities to be the caretaker. And meanwhile, things were going so they're doing so good, they said, "Well, let's play bingo twice a week." And so they knocked off the Thursday night meeting. Only had one meeting a week. And one day that one-legged drunk was hopping around there and a long limousine drove up. And three well-dressed men came out with those expensive suits, diamond rings, and said, "You got a nice little business here. You have any insurance?" "So what do you mean?" "Well, you know, tornado insurance, fire insurance, catastrophe insurance." The drunk looked at him and said, "This is AA. God protects us." He said, "That's your answer?" "Yeah." Two nights later, the roof blew off. Well, drunks are no fools. One's good, two's better. So they went out, and they not only fixed the roof, they added a room and got some more tables and some more chairs. Meanwhile, they got away from them beans, and they got some of them slip cards and all that other stuff. And they were rolling in money. And the money motive took over, and the next thing you know, God Almighty, they were giving away cash prizes in five figures, and people were coming from all over everywhere. So they decided, "Well, what the heck? My God, we'll just have a little noon meeting, and we'll have play bingo on Tuesday night." So they knocked all the three meetings off playing bingo. And meanwhile, they got so busy, a couple of new young drunks come in, and they made them help the gentleman. And they did so good, that one-legged drunk, they bought him a false leg. And he's running around there, hopping around, and he had three more visitors. And they asked him the same question. He gave him the same answer. The next time, not only the roof, but the back wall blew off. Well, drunk's no fool. One's good, two's better, three's terrific. They had so much money, they went out in the country, and they bought a piece of property and laid a concrete slab for it, reinforced concrete, steel. You can land a DC-10 on it, got one of them Butler steel buildings and dropped the ceiling, had room for 2,500 people. Put in a full-line cafeteria, marble board machines. They had them electronic boards, you know, to where you wouldn't even get a crick in your neck, you know, find your numbers. And if you decided you want to talk a little AA, you could come out at noon and the coffee would be free, and they'd put you in a little room about the size of a broom closet to have a little AA. Well, they had three more visitors. They asked them the same question. They got the same answer. This time, when they blew up concrete slab four, Butler steel building, bingo card tables, chairs. They blew it all the way into New Mexico. Well, when you're fooling with explosives in this country, you come under the jurisdiction of the meanest federal agency that you'll ever do any business with, and that's Secret Service. Now, if you think the FBI is ugly and the CIA, you don't know what those Treasury Secret Service boys are. They're mean. And I couldn't tell you this unless I hadn't experienced some dealings with them in my own life. Well, I get a call one day from our staff secretary, one of the staff secretaries in our office. She was all excited. "What's this about an AA group being dynamite?" I said, "This is three times." She says, "My God, we've had minicam operators from all over the television networks and all the radio networks. And what's this about AA being damn?" I said, "This is the third time. Why don't you call the delegate in the area?" It got in the newspapers. It got on the talk shows, the night shows, the news shows. It was all over everywhere, showing the building blowing up, bingo cards and everything. And they had one sign, Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was just as big as this thing up here. Yeah. Well, the group saw the error of its ways. So they decided to go back being a regular AA group. And that was 7 years ago. Last fall, the group voted to start playing bingo again. Well, that's drunks for you, I guess. I really don't know. And, you know, back in this, those who've been around AA for a while, you know, some of them still have slot machines. And the one group, it was busted. And the intake from the basket could never pay the group's expenses. So they were always in a hole and everything. And so finally, the brilliant idea, they had a big room upstairs, and it was a two-story house in a neighborhood. So they decided to have a 24-hour poker game. And members of AA would volunteer, and as each hand was completed, they'd take a cut, and certain cut would go give to the treasurer to pay the bills. And the room was full all the time. But they had one rule. If you left the room, your seat was vacant. And they always had a bunch sweating to jump in the game. Well, they had another problem. They didn't have any lavatory facilities in that room, which meant they had to leave the room. Well, drunks ain't no fool. They just made their own. They opened up the windows, men and women. The neighbors got awful upset. Trees were dying. Grass was turning yellow. And they had a business meeting and a big poker game one night. In this particular town, it's near the Gulf Coast. And, you know, when it rains, the raindrops are as big as half a dollar. And the water just runs into a canal, not sewer somewhere, and then goes out the Gulf somewhere. And so they waited until they had this big meeting. And right in the big meeting, here come one of them 3-inch rains in about 30 minutes. Well, drunks, you know, you come to an AA meeting, you come in, and you're there about 15 minutes before. Oh, maybe somebody making coffee, too. Then all of a sudden, 5 minutes before the meeting starts, here they come boiling in. Well, they come into the last meeting. It's in the neighborhood. They park in other people's on their grass and in their flower beds and everything else. And when they went out to get their cars after that 3-inch rain, they were stuck. They had to call wreckers to pull them out of the mud, and the neighbors really got upset. So they waited until they had the next big eating, meeting, and poker game and all that, and they called the police, and they raided them. They not only took everybody in the poker room and all the money and everything else down to jail, they had a regular AA meeting of about 75 downstairs. They even took them down there, hauled everybody down there. Well, there's always some lawyers, you know, around in AA, and one of them happened to be in the game. So he called his partner, and his partner come down, and they went to see the night judge, and they said, "Now, look, it's just a little penny ante poker, and we needed to help pay our bills. But we promise you, if you let us all go, we'll never do it again." Well, they had a state AA convention in that town. And on Sunday morning, when everybody went down to hear the Sunday morning spiritual speaker, there on the front page of that Sunday edition of that newspaper, in type the size of Japan bombs Pearl Harbor, were these words: "Texas Rangers raid AA group for gambling." Well, now, supposing you don't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous, and you've got a drunk that's been every place, and good God, you've had them in every kind of facility in the world except AA, in and out of jail, psychiatric hospitals, you name it, treatment modalities, that drunk. And finally somebody says, and you just drug them back from maybe Las Vegas to where they'd hock mama's rings and everything else and hot checks running around for gambling and drunk. And somebody said, "Well, why don't we try Alcoholics Anonymous?" And right as you get ready to dial the number, in comes one of those nosy neighbors that says, "How is that sorry, no good drunk in the bedroom doing?" "Well, we've tried everything. We're going to call Alcoholics Anonymous." And the neighbor says, "Wait a minute," and runs home and gets the front page of that newspaper and brings in Texas Rangers raid AA group for gambling. If you were in that situation and you had a drunk, then not only that, in gambling and everything else, would you call Alcoholics Anonymous? The answer is rather obvious. Most groups get themselves into, and this is AA's experience, into financial straits because they are paying rent more than what they are taking in the bank. And not telling them about self-support. Because for the simple reason, that is one of the greatest spiritual principles that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, you know, if a group doesn't have any money, it ain't got no money problems. You know when you got money problems? When you got money. That's when the trouble starts. Money may pose a different problem if a group treasurer grows too fat because beyond a sensible reserve. There is one simple solution that strengthens our unity and advances our purposes. Give the excesses to AA activity and services. I'm a firm believer. I have never seen an AA group yet that wasn't self-supporting, that if they gave that drunk the best shot when that drunk come in there, and hug him and love him into sobriety and give him a recovery program and go out afterwards and eat ice cream, you know, and have another meeting 2 o'clock in the morning on a street corner somewhere. Yeah. Yeah. And when that drunk begins to make a few, maybe a penny at a time, maybe a quarter, maybe what it is, but it is participation. We give a little of our time and a little of our money. Because you see, in Alcoholics Anonymous, we call talk about God and money at the same time because we need both of them. But it is in the proper proportion. Now, when newspaper and other media got hold of the facts that our trustees declared the principle that AA must always stay poor, for the principle of corporate poverty was firmly and finally embedded in AA's tradition. And when the newspapers got hold of these facts, there was a profound reaction. To people who are familiar with endless drives for charitable funds, AA presented a strange thing. Approving editorials abroad and in this country generated a great new wave of confidence and respect in what? In the integrity of Alcoholics Anonymous. For they pointed out that the irresponsible had become responsible by making financial independence part of its spiritual tradition. And that is a profound spiritual principle. And thank God for non-alcoholics such as John D. Rockefeller Jr. and others. In the early days of AA, he said, you stay sober. Help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety and your proper aim. And as long as we're doing the proper aim in AA, money comes in. It's when we're not doing the proper aim, that's when we begin to have problems as far as money is concerned or any other kind of problem. Tradition 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but we may, but our service centers may employ special workers. Spiritual as it is, AA is very much of this real world. The eighth tradition, like the seventh, focuses on that vulgar five-letter word that's not actually mentioned in each tradition. That word is money. How many of us had to explain to some cynical prospect, no, I'm not a social worker. I do not get paid for talking with you or staying with you while you shake out a drunk. We do this is because it's one of the best ways for us to stay sober ourselves. However, this does not mean, of course, that the idea of turning professional has never entered any AA's mind. In the lean years, our co-founder, Bill, Colonel Towns came to him and said, why don't you come work at the hospital? And he thought about being a lay therapist to earn money through his experience in helping alcoholics. And he went to the group. And he told them he's going to go to work at the hospital. And they said, well, is it for free? No, he's going to pay me a salary for working with the drunks. The drunks looked at him and said, but Bill, you're the head horse. If you do this, others are going to do it. And others are going to do it. And pretty soon, there won't be any members of the group. Where will that alcoholic have to go to get the help that you and we have received as a result of the AA group? And Bill, with a strong push from the group conscience, realized that he could never hang out a shingle saying, Bill W., AA faith healer, at $10 an hour. So it became clear to the early members that no AA should ever ask or accept payment for carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. That is, one-on-one, as a result of their own experience, there's somebody else, person-to-person, face-to-face, money. Now, you say, well, what about the member of AA who works in the treatment modality? They are working in a treatment modality, and treatment modality is not Alcoholics Anonymous. They're getting paid to follow the policies and the procedures of a regular, ongoing business. In AA, we get paid for our sobriety. We get paid for our sobriety. No, they're carrying the message of that treatment facility, what it can do for the alcoholic. Period. But new questions arose as our membership grew, and words spread sending thousands of alcoholics in search of AA. The first intergroup or central offices were usually manned by AA volunteers. But nowadays, such offices are so busy that full-time employers are needed as well. Naturally, AAs are better suited for it than non-alcoholics, but are they being paid? No. No, they're being paid to answer the phone. You need help, just a minute. We'll give you a number that you can call, and then in turn call whoever's on the 12-step list or a list of the groups or whatever they do. And also, when members of the family call, the blood can be emotionally attached. That no, but we also have recovery programs for the family, and give them the number of Al-Anon and Alateen. It's very, very vital. Very, very vital. They're getting paid to see that that alcoholic finds a meeting, or if they need to get into a treatment modality. But at night, you see them sitting in an AA meeting, taking their new ones, or in a regular AA meeting like that, you know. And a similar development is taking place in our General Service headquarters. Once a tiny office with just our co-founder, Bill, and one secretary. Now it has grown to the present General Service office. Many members of AA do not realize that Box 459, Grand Central Station, New York, New York, 10163, is one of the most prolific box office numbers in the world. There are millions and millions and millions of pieces of literature that go through that box a year, not counting books and booklets, all over the world. Many do not realize how many books, just take the Book of Alcoholics Anonymous alone. In 1952, they sold only 25,000 big books for the whole year. Last year, we averaged better than 100,000 big books a month. A month. We don't know where they go. That counts a hardback, the traveling copy, and that little bitty one that they put out recently. My God, it is the hottest thing on the market right now. But it'll taper off in time. Yeah. And so, as a result, they don't realize it. Those who work in our general office are paid on a commensurate scale for any ongoing business. You know? And these other offices and other assignments, members actually use their business experience and professional skills. They can be working on our conference-approved pamphlets, literature, or on the grapevine. These AAs, as writers and correspondents and managers and editors and artists. Now, one of the toughest things in the to do is to translate our literature into another language, a foreign language, other than English. It's tough, because you can take the big book as it is here in English, and you can remove a period or a comma, and you can change up the entire meaning in the context of that paragraph. And so it is very, very difficult. It took 10 years to get a good translation of the big book in German. And the reason for it is real simple. They have 7 definitions of spiritual in the German dictionary, and to find one that fits comfortably with everyone. And you don't realize what our literature goes through. And I'm going to use an example. This is the old one. What happened to Joe? And when they're getting ready to do this, Lewis R., who was a delegate to the General Service Conference from the Philadelphia area, that conference area that encompasses Philadelphia, rather, they were getting ready to put, and Bill said, "Lewis, we do not have too many blacks at that time in AA." And he said, "Well, where are most of the black alcoholics?" And he said, "Well, unfortunately, Bill, they're dying from alcoholism, or I was fortunate, or in the penitentiary, locked up." Bill said, "Well, we're getting thinking about putting out this pamphlet. We're going to have 6 faces at the bar. How about having one of the faces black?" Lewis said, fine, as long as it's not mine. Well, this has to go to the artist, and it's the Four Keller Press, and they print the cover before they do the guts. And everybody waited for this. It's going to be a milestone in AA. And it come out, and guess what? The black members of Alcoholics that saw it, my God, their hearts sunk. The black face was blue serge black. And they said, my God, it'll offend the lighter skinned one or the mulatto. Send it back and lighten it up. So they sent it back to the artist. Four color press. Everybody waits for it. Guess what? It came out, my God, it looked like a Chicano. And I don't know if any of y'all ever been around Chicanos and blacks in the same neighborhood. It's like World War VIII. They said, send it back and darken it up. And so it went back again for the third time. And it came back, and this is how it came back. Not too light, not too dark, just right. This one particular piece of literature in many parts of the world have brought more of our brother and sister alcoholics who happen to be black in color than all of our big books and everything else you've ever seen, because they said, hey, white man may mean business. And it's been a tremendous thing. Now, we can't keep them in our literature racks. We don't know where they go. And I personally believe that the reason that they're so popular is because they're written in to the average intelligence of most AA members, comic book style. You never know what there is. You know, I had a tremendous experience for 4 years. I was delegate to the World Service Meeting. When I happened to be one of your trusted servants on the General Service Board as Trustee at Large USA. And for 2 years, I was chairman of the translation, reprint, copyright of all of AA's material and literature all over the world. And that is a that was a wonderful experience. Wonderful experience. You've never lived until you've attended a Latin American Ibero translation meeting. My God. From Mexico and from Paraguay and Uruguay and El Salvador and Costa Rica and Colombia and Argentina. Gosh almighty, this one don't like this one the way it's printed. We say, we'll print your own, but send it in to us for verification. And you take a little country like El Salvador. The Florida Keys are almost geographically bigger than else. They've got 42,000 members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Costa Rica has got over 30,000. Mexico is the most prolific translator of our material. You know where they hold their Mexican convention in Mexico City? In the Bullfight Arena. Now, that's a good place to hold an AA convention. They have more last year at their AA convention than we had at our international convention in New Orleans in 1980. Prolific. The Japanese, my gosh, it's growing over there. The Japanese, they did the smartest thing, I personally believe. Right after they're in their fifth or sixth or seventh printing of the big book. The next book they translated was not the 12-12. You know what they translate? AA comes of age. AA comes of age. And they are in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. The way AA started and the trials and the tribulations that it went through. And all of the other things. And together with the recovery program, and they have developed such a love for AA. We had a lot of problems with the Japanese on making their 12-step calls. A drunk would be a member of the group, and he'd go back to drinking. They have what they call a 12-step hit squad. They'd go out to him, and they'd say, uh-huh, you're drinking. What you need is some more sake. And they'd pour him sake, and they'd give it to him, and they'd see which hand he'd grab it. And then the next one would come and give him a karate chop and break his arm. They start getting complaints. It's effective. Yeah, you betcha. You betcha. And as AA began to proliferate and grow all over the world, and to go, and those people in those countries, my gosh, it is 46% of our membership reside outside the continental limits of North America. And out of that 46%, including many, many groups in Western Canada, about 98% of them, they don't say the Lord's Prayer. They open the meeting with a serenity prayer and close it with a serenity prayer. Many of them, they don't hold hands. You don't dare go to a meeting where there's 90% Muslims in there. You don't hold hands. You don't touch one of them. Now, I've been in a lot of AA meetings in this country. If you got a watch and ring on and you hold hands in the meeting, you better check to see if you still got them out of my head. Yeah. And this has allowed AA to grow. This is God as they understand it. You know. Yeah. But the spirit is the same. You can go into where they speak a foreign language, but you can hear the laughter, and you can hear the language of the heart. And you're right at home. You know exactly what they're doing. One of the greatest things that I have ever seen in AA, and it still is, and a good friend of mine, he's dead now, and he shot himself in the head on one drunk and severed all the eye muscles and nerves and was totally blind. And he had a beautiful seeing eye dog. And he'd come to the AA meeting and the dog would lay there. You didn't need to have a watch. That dog knew when the hour was up. That dog would stay, he'd lay there and you could set your clock, watch by it. He'd stand up. And he'd reach over and he'd nudge his boss and silently and in dog language said to him, it's time to say the Lord's Prayer. And that's the most wonderful. That's a spiritual experience, believe it or not, to see that. And can you imagine an AA group, and it's happened so many times, arguing. They've got someone in there that is deaf. Arguing about they cannot let someone who will sign for that drunk who happens to be a non-alcoholic. Isn't that something? Isn't that something? Yeah. Yeah. In our part of the country, we didn't have anybody to sign. And so, I don't know. I just went to school to learn how to sign. I'm not very good at it, but I can tell a drunk I love him. And also tell a little bit about the steps and a little bit about my story. It doesn't take much time to do it. And that's a vast, vast field out there. That doesn't make me superior to anybody else. But I'll tell you one thing. It's kept me from drinking. Those and other things in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so, as a result, you know, that's what we talk about. They pay these wages for these people, and you have to remember. Now, going back to this piece of literature, it took 2 years to get it. Now, some old-timers say, now, wait a minute. Didn't Dr. Pop say, let's keep it simple? Well, I believe that's a precise reason that our conference-proof literature expresses the simplicity of our fellowship. Unfortunately, too many of our AA literature racks are cluttered up with non-AA literature, which I believe Dr. Bob meant when he says, let's keep it simple, and let's don't louse it up with Freudian concepts that appeal to the scientific mind. Tradition 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. The words, let's keep it simple, were the less words our co-founder Bill heard from his fellow co-founder Dr. Bob shortly before Dr. Bob's death in 1950, and aware that the word it meant our recovery program. Bill later wrote that we need to distinguish sharply between spiritual simplicity and functional simplicity. But when we get into questions of actions by groups, by area, and AA as a whole, we find we need to have some degree of organization to carry the AA message or else face confusion. Confusion is not simplicity. You know, a newcomer who is familiar with the modern electronic age that we've got now, with computers and everything else, and say, well, they look at sponsorship as a haphazard operation. That's the reason why it works, because it's haphazard. You can't work with the same person, same two people the same way. There's no two people absolutely alike in this world. If there were, one would be useless. And so as a result, they say, well, why don't you computerize this deal? And you have a little card at IBM. Can't you just see? A drunk comes in, and the secretary says, well, fill this out. And he gives him one of them IBM cards or whatever it is. And he, I don't know about you, but I come out like this. Didn't have holes in it. And he says, what's this? This is a profile card. We want your age, your name, your weight, your color, where you live, if you work, if you don't work, all your habits and et cetera, and what you drank and how you drank and et cetera and et cetera. And then we've got a profile of all of our members. And tonight, after the meeting, the secretary is going to take it down to the computer house, and they're going to drop all these cards in the computer, and there are going to be two cards come out at the bottom, yours and the one who matches your profile. Now, that sounds reasonable under the monitor computer things and scientific electronics that we have today, except for one thing. The time that card drops down, it's going to be the one sponsored. That one could be drunk. With all of the modern things that we got today, there's one thing that we'll never be able to do, and that is to computerize the language of the heart, because that is an inside job. But by actions, by groups, we need to have some degree of organization. If everybody else thinks that somebody's going to come, turn on the lights, make the coffee, get up the programs and the refreshments, what happens? No lights, no program, no coffee. So in smaller groups, they volunteer to do it. In larger groups, they have a little election and elect somebody to do it, the delegate. But they're taking on responsibility and not authority. And this particular tradition is so valuable, because whoever the trusted servants are, they're responsible only to the members of that group, period. And this tradition is a tremendous group principle. Tradition 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. We think that the future safety of Alcoholics Anonymous greatly depends upon Tradition 10. AA's principle of no controversy at the public level. And since AA has begun, AA has never been divided by a major controversial issue. By some deep instinct, we have known from the very beginning that no matter what the provocation, we must never publicly take sides as AA as a whole in any fight, even a worthy one. We must remember, however, that this reluctance or to fight one another or anybody else is not counted on as a special virtue which makes us feel superior to other people. Nor does it mean that the individual member, himself or herself, AA, now who is being restored as a citizen of the world, are going to back away from their individual responsibility to act as they see fit upon the issues of our time. I'm so thankful my sponsor told me, he said, David, I don't want to ever hear of you or catch you using your name and the two words Alcoholics Anonymous after it to get anything, whether it be a bank loan or whatever it is, an automobile or anything else. The principles of AA, if you'll live them, that will come to the surface. Don't use AA as a crutch, because if you use it and you should get drunk, then what will people think about the integrity of Alcoholics Anonymous? And he says, you have to remember, it's from that vast world out there that we get our members. That's where we get our referrals. Yeah. And I'm so thankful that he's honed that in on me. And because we survive and grow, and we know, because Alcoholics Anonymous is something of greater importance than any writing that or any weight that we could throw collectively back at other causes. Because recovery from alcoholism is life itself to us, and we wish to preserve its full strength. Because why? It's our means of survival. Now, one of the experiences that Bill went through in order to get this particular tradition, he leaned on the Washingtonian movement, which is a movement among alcoholics which started in Baltimore over a century ago. Over a century and three quarters ago. Almost had the answer. At first, the society was composed entirely of alcoholics trying to help one another. Their membership soon passed the 500,000 mark in 2 years. When I got sober in April of 67, A got started in 35, and that's 32 years. Not counting those who got sober and were continued sober when they died, but at that time, they estimated about 385,000 members of Alcoholics Anonymous. In 32 years. What happened? Well, had the Washingtonians stuck to their primary purpose, they might have found the full answer. Instead, the Washingtonians permitted politicians, reformers, both alcoholic and non-alcoholic, to use the society for their own selfish purposes. They took violent sides in the slavery issue. Some Washingtonians became temperance crusaders. And within a very few short years, they completely lost their effectiveness in helping alcoholics, and their society collapsed. The same thing will happen to Alcoholics Anonymous if we start allowing outside influences and getting involved in the group, getting involved. That's the reason we don't endorse MAD or any of those other things, or national councils on alcoholism or anything else. Because we're not incorporated, basically, as a legal instrument with which to attack anyone, no matter how severe the provocation. Our two affiliates, AAWS Incorporated and the Grapevine Incorporated, yes, they are, because they are also legal entities, and they have to for the copyright of our material. And so we have to remember that AA is a fellowship, not an organization. Incorporation necessarily makes it an organization, because we believe that a spiritual faith and a way of life cannot be incorporated. And as long as AA remains a spiritual faith and a way of life open to all men and women who suffer from alcoholism. Tradition 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. There are not but three absolutes in Alcoholics Anonymous. Absolute abstinence from alcohol. The absolute freedom for any alcoholic to become a member of AA or leave AA. And absolute anonymity on the public media. Now, you hear it read a lot in a lot of conference, you know, on the anonymity, the press, radio, films, and TV. The two letters TV have not been added to this tradition. For those of you who do not know, in order to change a word, a comma, to delete or add a word or comma or period, or delete it, as I said, of our 12 steps, our 12 traditions, and our 12 concepts of world service. 3/4 of the AA groups all over the world that are registered in their directories have to vote on it, and a minimum of 6 months' time has to be allowed. Doesn't mean they can't be changed, but up to now it hadn't. You say, well, why don't you put the two words TV on it? Very simple. Radio is audio and films is video. That's all. Now, the alcoholic who has and is recovering through our program is himself or herself the strongest attraction that they've had. When people still today ask what led them to AA's help, the answer still most given is an AA member. Our chances would have been slim if all of us had remained in hiding. But how many of us have chosen to tell our friends, our families, our neighbors, our employers, our physicians, our co-workers, our clergymen, that we're in AA? And when we are doing this, we are not breaking our anonymity in the meaning of this tradition. This tradition has to do with our public relations policy on the public media. Now, suppose a sick alcoholic never has the good fortune to meet an AA. How are they going to find us? His or hers will be difficult if the local group thinks it should be anonymous, too. This tradition is talking about personal anonymity. Remember, no alcoholic will be attracted to AA if he or she doesn't know that it exists or that he or she has a distorted, unfavorable impression of its members and its program. Giving the general public, an accurate picture of AA is the chief job of our Public Information Committee. In addition, they often carry the message to certain groups, from correctional facility people to personnel directors whose works and ministers and works who have frequent contact with alcoholics. The information about AA is offered to the general public in all forms of communication media. In print and over the air or the radio, it's easy to guard a member's anonymity, of course. But television, which was not in wide use when this particular tradition was written, according to our conference experience, a member is breaking his or her anonymity when he or she is identified on television as a member of AA and their face is shown whether or not their name is given, because the open face is the anonymity break on the public media. And yet, with this medium, with this vast audience, this cannot be ignored. One of the best ways not to violate your anonymity on the public media is don't get up on the public media. But if one is asked to do it, there are certain guidelines and experience. The shadow method, the back of the head method, to where the face is not shown. A lot of things like that. You know, at one of the elections for President of the United States, when Ford and Carter were running for president, really when the country went to bed that night, they didn't know who was going to be the new President of the United States or whether Ford would be. And so every morning, Wednesday morning, I get up about 5:30 and go to town. And so I didn't want to be a dummy. I very seldom listen to television. That's my quiet time. But I didn't want to be a dummy. I'm going downtown with all those business people and everything else, and they talking about this and that. So I flipped on the radio, television, and I went to my bathroom, and I have a mirror with a long wall with a long mirror. And I run the hot water, and right when I get the lather on my face, and right as my razor starts to come down, I hear two female voices. And I have a conversation with me in the mirror. David, you haven't had a drink, but you're hearing two female voices. One is familiar and the other one is unfamiliar. And the one sounds like your wife. So I stuck my head around there, and unbeknownst, she was on a television program for Al-Anon. And of course, the unfamiliar voice was the moderator. Her face was shown, not a member of A. But I could see the back of this lady's head. Now, I'm more familiar with my wife's backside than I am her front side, I don't mind telling you. And they're talking about me. So to be sure, I run into her bedroom, and her bed's made up. Now, we've been married long enough and to have separate bedrooms, you know. And so I'm going downtown to the barbershop. And I'm on the freeway, and I'm getting resentful and all this and that. And I get down, I walk in the barbershop and say, "Hey, David, saw and heard your wife on television this month." I think everybody in North Texas watched that particular station. And I get out to my office, and I call my wife up, and I said, "Grace, I want to congratulate you, because Al-Anon's traditions are basically the same as ours. Where do you think they got them?" Except the fifth tradition is trifold, and where they say they practice the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Isn't it utterly amazing? Doesn't say the 12 steps of Al-Anon. And time will not permit, or I'll tell you how they got those steps and the wording. And so as a result, you know, and I call her up and I congratulate her, but I said, "Grace, I want to tell you something. You didn't use your name Grace on there. Why did you have to use the first name of the woman that you accused me of getting locked up with the last time I was in jail?" She said, "That's what you call live and let live, Buster. Ha, ha, ha," and hung up. One time on radio, one of them talk shows, you know, call-in shows, where they have a moderator and have a member of AA, a male member of AA, and a lady member of AA, and an Al-Anon and an Al-Anon. And I just say, "My name's David. I don't tell them how I make a living or anything." You get all kinds of questions in from drunks, and you get questions called in, you know, from members of AA, trick questions, try to trick you and all this kind of stuff. And then you get those who believe firmly in Lord Jesus and say, "Well, if you're talking about God, why don't you come to the church," and et cetera, and the whole conglomerate of people. And there was a little youngster that was supposed to be sleeping, and it's about 11:30 at night. And he run in and he woke in. He's listening to the radio. He woke his mama up. He says, "Mama, wake up. Our dentist is on the radio and he's a drunk. He recognized my voice." 2 weeks later, that little monster had an appointment with me. And his mother said, "Well, before you start working on your little patient," she said, "I have to ask you a question. How long have you been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous?" At that time, it was, I think, 12 years. And she says, "You know, your little patient's grandfather, my father, passed away last December," she said, "and he was 19 continuous years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I'm one of these that firmly believes if we're willing to do these things, we hear some of the best things about us that you could ever possibly imagine." "Yes, I know you see, but who do you see on the anonymity break? Do you see a member that's been sober 30, 35, 40 years? 20, 25 years? Who do you see?" Fresh new ones in either the arts, motion picture, television, sports, things like that, on the talk shows. Because that creates sensationalism. This is what we're talking about. And you notice if you ever on the talk shows and they violate their anonymity with their name, "I'm a member of AA," and et cetera, and et cetera, and their face and everything, you notice that whoever is the host on that show never asks them, "Well, what is Alcoholics Anonymous?" And even if they did, most of them can't give you an answer because they really don't know. They really don't know. But it's a sensationalism, you see. And one of the reasons, because I'll tell you, that is a 100% violation of the strongest, most perfect spiritual principle that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because anonymity is a protective coat that governs our whole society. But it is more than protection. It has another dimension, a spiritual dimension. And this leads to tradition 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Let us always remember that anonymity, not taking credit for our own or others' recovery, is humility at work. Anonymity, as we observe it in AA, is at root a simple expression of humility. You see, if I'm going to take credit for getting a drunk sober, then I have to take the credit if he gets drunk again. When we use our 12 steps to recover from alcoholism, we're each trying to achieve real humility, to put our self-respect on a solid base of truth rather than fantasies and fictions about ourselves. When we use the 12 traditions to work together in AA, we're all trying to acquire real humility. As individual members, by recognizing our true place in AA as a fellowship, by recognizing AA's true place in this world of reality, we remind us, each tradition-minded, that we are not recovering on our own and that we should control our personal desires and ambitions in order to guard the unity of our group so that the alcoholic can get the best shot and the group will be available for the alcoholic to come. All of us are just alcoholics together, and we are not entitled to rule on the qualifications of those who are seeking our help. And when we are given responsibilities in Alcoholics Anonymous, they're not titles to flaunt in each other's face, but they're opportunities to serve. In the rising battle on alcoholism, we should not let our pride in AA mislead us in linking our fellowship with other agencies in order to bid for their share, for their power, their publicity, and money. And we do not want to sell our program as a surefire remedy in the extravagant terms of a circus or a promotional campaign. Nor do we wish to dramatize it by identifying only the noted people outside in the world who happen to be members of AA, implying that for each of us this has been an individual accomplishment. Because Tradition 12 reminds us, we have something stronger than our own personalities fall back on. Our principles come first. They are not our own invention. They reflect eternal spiritual values. And with this tradition, both as individuals and as a fellowship, we humbly acknowledge our dependence on a power greater than ourselves. I want to thank the committee for allowing this member of Alcoholics Anonymous to participate in this afternoon on our 12 traditions. Because y'all have given far more to me than I could possibly give to yourself. And you know, and to sit in this hotbed country of Southeastern Conference football, and to see as many of y'all that are here while that battle is going on, and all those that were here, I personally appreciate your attendance and your enthusiasm. And I want to tell you that football games on television has had a poor record of keeping drunk sober as anything's ever been on television. God bless each and every one of you. Thank you very, very much.